Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Illustration Department Podcast. My name is Giuseppe Castellano. In this podcast, I talk to folks in illustration, graphic design, publishing, animation, and other creative fields about their beginnings, their successes, and the bumps and bruises they've experienced along the way. In this episode, my guest is Kay Frazier, Senior Art Director at Capstone. Illustrating a picture book can be a heavenly experience, but it can also be hellish when clients give you too many notes and not enough time and so on. Luckily, illustrators have art directors to guide them through. Among other topics, we talk about Kay's path to becoming an art director from Buenos Aires to Minnesota. She provides insight on how she and her team look for and work with illustrators. Kay answers key questions from illustrators about needing an agent, considering diversity, emailing art directors, and more. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Are you in Minnesota?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I am. So right now it's kind of questionably sunny, and I live on the outskirts of Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. So it's Chaska. It's 30 minutes. And I work in office from home, like I have for the last year and some. So, as you can see, I have like this Mongo size screen and way more screens. I feel like I'm tanning consistently.
Yeah. I mean, you like roll out of bed, you know, drink a glass of orange juice or whatever the heck you do in the morning. And then
there are your
screens.
Yeah. Yeah. Waiting for me and my dogs.
Do you miss the not going to the office at Capstone? I mean, what are the pluses? What's one plus? Let's say one plus, one minus from now, like a year of pandemic working.
Yeah. I feel like we have a lot of people that office outside, and we have two offices. We have one that it's kind of in the Edina centralized area, and another one in North Mankato. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have the team divided. And you don't get to see people all the time. Mm-hmm. I feel like now I see people more than what I did when I was in the office in some, you know, instances. Sure. And everybody works together. I think there is more synergy versus before you would be in a meeting room.
Right.
You know, and they would be in a meeting room in the Mankato office. And then we would have meetings across that, which now it just seems a little silly. But, you know, you have side conversations or whatever with whoever you were within that room that maybe you wouldn't share to the bigger area. Also, there is more cross conversations. We have cover meetings, and we present the concepts that we're developing or like different stages throughout the concepts. And we involve sales and marketing within those presentations.
Yeah.
It's great to actually have all these people connected on the same place. We get the opportunity individually to be presenting what we're bringing to the table and gather their feedback firsthand without having to be in like a meeting room and having, you know, connections. And I can't hear that voice or I can't hear that person, you know, like
know.
People are talking very softly
yeah.
in a meeting room. You're like, what what was that? I didn't catch it. And you're just, you know, having somebody transcribe that.
Right. I know. Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, the conference room, those conference room meetings, man, I swear. The only meetings I really liked were my design meetings. Like the design team would meet on Friday mornings.
Yeah.
And this was a few years ago. I don't remember if it was every other Friday or every Friday. Anyway, you know, we just sat and it was purposely 15 minutes. Like we just, you know, you sit down because what's really happening when you have a bunch of coworkers in this large conference room, let's say you have 20 coworkers and the meeting is an hour long, that's 20 hours of zero productivity, you know, of them not doing their jobs. I mean, yeah, you're having a cover meeting or whatever, but that's a lot of hours of not getting things done. So we, you know, we would have donuts and shoot the breeze.
That sounds wonderful.
And then, you know, be like, all right, guys, see ya.
I know. We have one of my favorite meetings that we currently have is our design creative meetings, which is on Thursdays, and it's everybody kind of brings same things that they're working on or they have in progress. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not everybody's presenting every time that we mm-hmm. meet. It's just, you know, oh, I'm struggling with this. Anybody has any 2 cents on it, or solutions or things that I should be trying, or mm-hmm. And they're fabulous. I think also it's harder when we're pod away in within this situation to kind of talk design and discuss mm-hmm. art. And it's kind of a good way to keep those senses kind of going and nimble. But
so you're a senior art director? Is that is that the accurate title?
Yes.
Senior art director at Senior Capstone. Director.
Yes.
What kinds of books do you oversee?
I would say a little bit of everything and anything. It's a huge window. I oversee from picture books mm-hmm. all the way to graphic novels. So the spectrum is very huge, including, you know, chapter books and nonfiction titles as well. So it's a mix. It's a big mix.
Do you enjoy the mix?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
I think it comes from enjoying the diversity of it all. Mm-hmm. I'm a problem solver. Like when it comes to visually, that's kind of my living energy. Mm-hmm. So problem solving visually, it's kind of what makes me tick.
Man, you are singing my tune, Kay, because that's I loved that part of being an art director. You know, I loved when someone walked into my office and they were like, "I'm having a tough time," and I'm like, "A problem?
Yeah,
let's fix it." You know, it was so much fun. I mean, that's the collaborative nature of it all is so it's hard to describe. It really, really is. And you know, and then obviously all the work is toward this children's book, this picture book, you know, this really cool product. So
yes.
You're from South America.
Yes, I am.
Where exactly?
I am from Buenos Aires, Argentina.
What?
So how did Spanish is my second language. English is actually my third, not my second.
And Greek is your first language, of course.
No. So Spanish is my first, French second, English third.
Spanish 1, but, French 2, English 3.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Where's the French come from?
Actually, I went to a French school growing up.
In Buenos Aires?
In Buenos Aires, yeah. So I had French from kindergarten all the way to 7th grade. And then we started learning English in 8th grade.
Can I ask, why? Maybe this is something I don't know, and everyone literally listening, you know, everyone knows this, and I don't know this. Why are there a lot of French schools down there? Like, what's the deal?
No, I think it was just it's a French school. Pretty much everybody, I would say, most people are bilingual.
Okay.
Spanish in another language. Mm-hmm. So my mom thought it would be great to send me to this French school, and so I did, and then I learned English when I was a little older, and that just clicked right away, and it was very comfortable, and I love reading. And so then I started reading in English quite a bit more than I did in Spanish, and then I decided that I was going to just move into more of that reading, and I had this little notebook that I brought with me everywhere that I wrote all these words that I didn't understand or know. And then I would look them up.
Yep.
It's really nerdy. But I really, really love the language and it just seemed more comfortable sometimes than my own.
Your name is Kay, but your full name is Carolina, right? Is that how you pronounce
it? Yes. Yes. So my maiden name is Carolina Maria Castro Sorrisa.
Right off the tongue.
So it's a mouthful.
Right off the tongue, yeah.
Yes. So when I started college here, when I did a transfer, nobody can pronounce it correctly. It got butchered all many ways.
You don't say. In America?
Yeah.
Shocker.
It was Catalina Carolina, I wouldn't respond to any of them. So when I sign my artwork, in even in South America, I would write, because you pronounce the K as a ka. Mm. So then I would say Kado, and that was like my nickname, Kado. And so then I would sign here the same way, and people started seeing that K, and it just kind of sticked, and I just went with it.
Okay. I mean, is this one of those things where like your family calls you Catalina and then everybody else calls you K?
Yeah, so I would say everybody back home in Buenos Aires calls me Catalina, Caro, yeah. My mom still, nice. But everybody else, it's K pretty yeah. much. Yeah.
I have a similar experience. So my parents are Italian immigrants, and very quickly, because I talk about them all the time, and I don't want to bore the listeners, but super fast story. I'm Giuseppe, but my entire family calls me Pino.
Okay.
Because a diminutive version of Giuseppe is Giuseppino, like little Giuseppe is Giuseppino in Italian.
Yeah.
And my dad's Giuseppe. So I'm little Giuseppe, even though I'm like 17 feet taller than he is. And so I'm Pino. And my entire family calls me Pino, but like professionally and my friends that, you know, they call me Giuseppe. So it's a sort of like duality. My dad's the same way. My dad, when he was born, his mother, my grandmother, wanted to call him Pietro, Peter. The day he was born, my grandfather was out during his many multi-day treks walking goats. And so he wasn't around. When he came back, he's like, oh, we have a baby. That's cool. He wanted my father's name to be Giuseppe after his brother. And my grandmother said over my dead body, his name is Pietro. And so my grandfather went to the like town hall or whatever and officially registered him as Giuseppe Castellano. He grew up his entire life, his father calling him Giuseppe and his mother calling him Pietro.
That is hilarious.
And so, yeah, so at work, my dad's Giuseppe, but among his family, he's Pietro. His nephews and nieces, my cousins all call him Zio Pietro. So, it's all, we could talk about names for like 3 hours. But I do want to talk about art, specifically yes. illustration art. So really quickly though, before we get to the illustration stuff, how did you like catapult from Buenos Aires to Minnesota? Were you just like, you know, it's a little too hot and I'd like a place where it's a little too cold. I mean, was that, what the heck?
No.
Or was it a college thing?
Yeah, it was a college thing. And it's kind of a funny story because I just wanted to go for a semester just to have the experience of living abroad. And I didn't talk to my parents about it. I just did like the application and took the test, the English aptitude test, and it was scored based. So I was like, oh, I'm sure I'll be on a waiting list for like Brazilian years. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, I get a call saying that I'm top on the list and I need to make a decision. And I was like, I haven't even talked to my parents yet about this. It was terrible. So then I had to have that conversation and, you know, they were very supporting. So,
awesome.
And then I came here to school and it was a perfect fit. I finished in Minneapolis at the Art Institute and then I started working on studios. Like I work in a couple of small studios, then moved into a tech company, which it just didn't seem like it was the right fit. And then I saw this position as a designer for a startup that was looking for a fiction designer. Mm-hmm. And growing up, you know, I was a kid that had a really hard time sleeping. And I had, you know, this is South America before computers. I had a ream of paper underneath my bed. My mom would be like, lights out, and I would turn off the lights for 10 minutes, turn them back on mm-hmm. when she went to bed, and I was writing and illustrating on the borders of my paper stories and random things and that, and then I would give them to my friends and they would read them, and that was kind of how I dealt with my lack of sleep, I guess. I just really had a really hard time going to bed. Mm-hmm. Then it kind of made sense that when this job came up, I was like, wow, like I could really do this. Like this would be like my job. I get up and I get to work on stories and develop it and work with artists. And it just seemed like amazing, out of this world. Yeah. So I started that job. It was a startup. It was crazy. Like the amount of work we had to do, it was insane. And then now it's, you know, part of this big imprint, and it's pretty fabulous.
Yeah, that's what year was that?
It was 2005.
So, you know, almost a couple decades later, and you're now senior art director. I have a ton of questions for you from illustrators. Every Thursday night, we at the ID have a critique group, and it's at 9 p.m. every Thursday night, and it's free. You know, 30, 40 illustrators, just we hang out, we look at art and stuff, and I told them that I was going to be talking to you, and I asked them if they had any questions for you, and boy, do they. In some kind of order. So, yeah. Oh my gosh, where do we even begin? Because there's so many. Let's do these. All right, let's start here.
Okay.
Obviously, many of them want to work with you. You know, they want to work with an art director. They are looking to get jobs in publishing, specifically children's publishing. So the most obvious question we'll start with first is, how do they get to you? How do they contact you? Where the hell is your email address?
That is a great question. I have people reaching out. Actually, I have a Twitter account, and a lot of people reach out through there. Uh-huh. I do have my work email account through LinkedIn. So a lot of illustrators and artists reach out through there. Mm-hmm. But I would say I check Twitter all the time. I actually do Twitter submissions by season. And that's more for all the illustrators that, you know, are self-represented, that they just want to go at it on their own, to give them the opportunity to kind of reach out and get in contact with me. And then from that massive submission, I actually go through each one of them and pulled a whole list that I actually share back with the team.
Nice.
With their links and their contact info. We do work with a lot of agents as well.
Yeah, I would reach out through Twitter and go, hey, illustrators, I'm looking for someone who's into 1980s video games and comic books. And, you know, who do you know? And one of the things I noticed almost every single time, if not every time, so many illustrators would respond with, not them, not themselves. They wouldn't go, hey, look at me. They would say, you know who you should look at? My friend. There was so many of them would share other people's links and stuff, which is a reminder that there's still humanity in the world. There's still goodness in the world. I mean, that was one of the things that I've really truly loved about. People call them cattle calls, which I'm not a big fan of. Look, Twitter is a great way. These Twitter call outs, some art directors do this. You've been doing this for a long time. I used to do it for a long time. It's a great way to circumvent the whole like velvet rope, ivory tower, gatekeeping bullshit that you have to deal with when it comes to agents. I mean, I'm sorry. I have agents on the podcast. Some of them are my buddies, but this whole idea that you know, have to get to you through them.
That's not true.
Utter nonsense. It's utter nonsense. It is.
And many times, what I enjoy is there is a lot of submissions that are, you know, artists themselves, they are agented and they are saying, hey, here's my work, come check it out. You know, I'm represented by this and this person, but that doesn't stop them from, you know, taking that reaching out step. Right. either. So yeah. I think it's a great way to kind of scream out of the wind and then just for everybody to kind of listen to that message and do what they must with it. You know, if I love when I do those calls is my favorite day of the year just because it's so wide range. In anything that you can think of might be there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a treasure in that way.
You said seasons. I didn't want to, I didn't want you to get away with saying that without explaining that. So how many seasons a year? Three?
We have two.
Okay.
We have actually two seasons, spring and fall.
So do you start the year prior or a year and a half prior?
No, just a year.
A year. So like this fall, you'll call out for books for fall 2022.
Well, we are actually starting right now with fall 22.
Oh, all right.
Right now. So it's like
a year in
some
change. Yeah.
Yeah. And change.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
All right. Does it, so it doesn't matter to you whether an illustrator has an agent or not?
No, not at all.
That was another question.
And I think it has a lot to do with how they're communicating. It has to do with their artwork. It has to do with the consistency within the artwork as well, depending on what project we're working on. And if you're an illustrator that, you know, would like to work on graphic novels, we for sure will look at the character consistency, the panel narrative. And depending on the level of the graphic novel, we will look at something more simple from a paneling perspective versus something that is very high and complex. It's all ranges of all different product.
Which is why, I mean, I guess I could get into, okay, well, what exactly, stylistically speaking, you know, what exactly are you looking for? But I think it's safer to say, because there's still a ton of other questions, I think it's just sort of safe generally to say everything, just everything.
Yeah, yeah, it's right? not, it's not that, yeah, no.
Okay.
I work, and currently I'm working in a couple of picture books. I also have graphic novels, and I have chapter books, early chapter books. So it's truly, it's a mix of it all.
Okay.
And I would say that differences are strengths. It's not just about like mainstream, whatever it's, you know, happening anymore.
Exactly.
It's about truly dedicating in the narrative and the visual narrative and like united them in a way that it makes sense for all readers, not just, you know, exclusively somebody. So that's the thing that we're really focusing on.
Yeah. Which leads to the next question, diversity.
Yes.
Ethnicity. In not just in the books, but in the choices for illustrators. I mean, you know, this has been a conversation that's been going on in publishing for a while now. And it's certainly the conversation, the voices are getting louder and louder in a good way. You know, there's finally, I think publishers have turned their full attention to this issue. I'm not saying it's solved by any means, but it's certainly being addressed. Perhaps not as full-throatedly as some would want, but heck, you know, it's definitely progress. What's your position on this? I mean, what are you, when you're looking for illustrators, I mean, one of the things that doesn't bug me, but it's a question for me is how do you determine the ethnicity or the race of an illustrator if it's not clear? That's a stupid question. I'll ask this. I mean, what's your approach when it comes to finding illustrators from misrepresented, you know, historically misrepresented and underrepresented groups?
Currently, it takes a lot of research, and we are trying to match. We have a lot of own voices authors, which we're trying to specifically match to illustrators so that it's a true representation of the culture and the story. I think it takes a lot of searching. It truly does.
Yeah.
And talking to people and connecting, is not just about reviewing a portfolio anymore. You just need a little bit more insight to, you know, who this person is, and a little bit more than you did in the past, because I really truly don't think that just looking at our work is the only thing. Mm-hmm. The way it works for us anyways is we bring these options to the table to our team, mm-hmm. and then we discuss the artists, mm-hmm. With the author.
Really?
And yeah. Mm-hmm. Many times actually authors bring options to the table as well to artists that they're huge fans of, or they would love to work with. Sometimes, you know, we present a whole bunch of options to themselves too. It's kind of a mix of everything, but as you said, it's very different than what it used to. And I think now having a presence online for illustrators and having a bio, of, you know, who they are, what they've been, it's a huge plus.
Yeah. I often suggest illustrators in their bios on their websites to share just a tiny bit, because, you know, it's the internet. The internet's incredibly scary.
Oh yeah.
Just a super, yes. Like a little bit of, you know, where you live, where you're from, generally, not specifically.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, maybe a little bit of trivia, just to humanize, like further humanize you. So you're not just a hand. You're also a person
absolutely.
Behind the hand, you know?
Yeah.
What's when you're looking at these portfolios, in addition to, you know, learning a little bit more about the artist and looking at the work and everything, what's an obvious no?
That's a good question. I think I'm very deep into the project itself. I think I would look for consistency and actual representation of a character. I think that's a big one. If I see the same character looking very, very different from one, you know, to one image,
yeah,
to
sure.
the other, I was like, yeesh. that would be a hard sale.
Right.
For me, from a narrative perspective, I think there is a lot of room for coaching as well. So that it's always a good opportunity. And we've done it plenty of times where we kind of coach an illustrator through the structure of mm-hmm. building something completely different mm-hmm. that they never worked on before.
The consistency thing is obviously a pretty common, you know, issue, but I think it might be it might be important to talk about why that is, because if a character within a book that you're illustrating within a 32 page picture book, roughly what, 14, 15 spreads, something like that, pieces of
yeah.
art, the character is going to appear, the main character is going to appear some, at least 15 times, if not 20, 25 times.
Yep.
Can you draw the same character 25 times? If you can't, that makes your job harder. Because
yeah.
the sketches will come in, they'll be all over the place. You'll have to spend way more time than you have to call out, like, okay, this ear is now lower, and over here it's higher, and
yeah.
over here the eyes are too close, and over here the eyes are too far apart. It's so much more work for you and
yeah.
for everyone reviewing the sketches
yeah.
and the art. So that's why, one main reason why consistency
yeah.
is a huge thing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The timelines are it, you
yeah,
know, it's
exactly.
not like you have a lot of room
yep.
To kind of burn in a lot of back and forth through that. You just need
right.
somebody that you know can do the job.
Yeah. You said coaching. Someone asked about the illustrator art director relationship.
Yes.
What do you think is an illustrator's role in the picture book making process outside of the obvious?
I think it's no different than everybody else that it's involved within the project itself. It's definitely a team effort, and we're kind of all trying to get aligned into bringing this narrative to life visually. Mm-hmm. It's an ongoing conversation.
Yeah.
I think that's what their relationship is overall.
But, like, you don't just hire them and go, all right, see ya. Thanks a lot.
No.
You're there. I mean, you're
yeah. We talk back and forth off and on all day, like, you know, every other day or something like that. And there is, hey, I'm working on this bread. Does this make sense to you? Do you see this and that? Is there something that, you know, that it's not quite right? Yeah. And so then you just quickly look at it and you answer back if there is any flags. You explain, hey, I really don't think, you know, that's a humanly possible way to hold your arm. Or, do you know, like, you have those type of conversations ongoingly. And even when we receive all the sketches for a picture book, for example, and we review it as a team, then you kind of suffered through all the comments that you received. And then you have those type of conversations of, you know, I think we can do without this. I still think we need to change, you know, this maybe first two spreads because it's not getting through.
And illustrators should feel very comfortable. Maybe not pushing back isn't the right way of saying that, but should feel very comfortable saying, you know, emailing you and saying, "Hey, can we talk about this? I have thoughts this. I have questions on this, or this direction isn't clear." I've had chats with illustrators who feel like it's an imposition almost. It's like they will upset you if they come back to you with questions and pushbacks and all that kind of thing.
Absolutely no. There is no dumb questions. I really do believe in that.
I agree.
And I feel like the more you know about it, the better job you'll be able to do.
Right.
So I think it really is great. And I have, you know, illustrators which I work with for years. It's funny because we don't need to talk that much, but we talk because, you know, we miss each other in that way. I mean, those are very great, amazing relationships, and there is trust invested, and there is growth both ways. I've been taught a lot of things that maybe I didn't kind of quite grasp or see, and the other way around. It's, you know, I think it's a learning opportunity both ways.
Yeah. So let's say an illustrator listening to this conversation after the podcast is over finds your email address and begins to draft an email to you. What exactly should it say? And what exactly should they include?
It would be great to know a little bit about who they are and how they heard about me. Their reason on which why they think it would be, you know, a good fit for Capstone, and also work samples. I think, you know, as time goes by, we're moving away from, you know, the wonderful postcards we used to get.
Stop breaking my heart. Days. Stop it. I didn't hear you say that. Nope.
I heard about your donut postcard review. What was it? Mondays or something
Wednesdays.
Like that?
Mailers and coffee. My favorite day of the week. Fabulous.
But I think also I would love to get their website or somewhere to just go in and dive deep into what they're showing, what they're loving to do, and what drives them.
Okay. What should they avoid in that email?
I would say avoid 400 meg attachments. That is a huge one that sometimes I just get this giant PDF. Mm-hmm. It's just random stuff attached, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Don't kitchen sink it.
I just feel like they're throwing the kitchen sink over the wall and be like, here, have an intention with what you're sending me, with what you're writing to me.
Okay.
I think it all needs to be a nice, neatly packaged that tells me who you are as an artist and showcases your work. And kitchen sinking it will not. It will tell me that you're an all for all and you're not dedicating those 5 minutes to actually cater this email to me.
How many emails do you get a day, would you say? Or a week?
Like from artists, yeah. Or you're saying from emails in general?
From the most important part of a picture book outside of the art director, namely the illustrator. No, I'm kidding. how many illustrator emails do you get a week?
I would say around 50 some.
Okay.
So like would be accurate.
10, yeah. 10, 12 a day, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was about right. Like that was about what I got, when I was an art director, and the kitchen sink emails were, every email you look at, because it's your freaking job to look at it.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
Yes, you open it, but then at the same time, you're like, there goes your chance, like, you know?
Right, because you're just, it's basically, the kitchen sink emails are basically like, I'm not, on their end, it's like, it feels like, I'm not saying this is what the reality is, because they could very well be like, you know what, I don't know what he likes, so I'm just going to send them everything, which is, it's okay, you know? But from the art director's perspective or the receiver's perspective, it feels as if like you're not doing any research on them or on the books they're doing, and you don't really care to spend that much time learning anything about them, and you're just going to throw everything at them. How do you expect them to respond back and be like, oh, this is great. I really like that 17th piece you sent me. I don't know. I mean, send what you want to send, but just be mindful of the recipient.
Yeah. I think it's just being smart about it.
Sure.
You know, like knowing that there is 55, submissions or whatever per week.
Yeah.
What is it about yours that it's going to make it stand out and be like, oh, this would be a great fit for this.
Another question I received from the critique group illustrators was, publishing industry and how it is changing. How is it changing?
We have more of a mix of digital and print. We also developed straight up digital stuff as well. And we are doing mixed projects, like with Google and with Amazon and their devices. So that was very different, and that is kind of a mix through illustration and animation kind of crossover, which is different for us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been fun.
Yeah. Being mindful of your time here. So let's remember that there are illustrators listening. What would be one last bit of advice that you'd like to share with them? Speaking directly to them.
That's a good one. I would say thrive in the uniqueness of your work and who you are as an artist. Like I said, differences are your strength. Mm-hmm. If you are to reach out to an AD, just be mindful, like be very specific about who is this person? What do they work on? And what can you bring to the table?
Kay's email is in this episode's show notes. If you enjoyed our conversation, please share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, and provide a positive rating and review. Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/illustrationdept. In return, you'll receive our soft enamel pin, a reusable discount code for 10% off, and access to patron-only episodes we're calling Extra Credit. This podcast is produced by the Illustration Department, a global leader in online education for illustrators. Visit us at illustrationdept.com for class offerings, testimonials, the Alumni Showcase, the podcast show notes, our forum, the bookshop, and more. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.